Well, I'm just curious, do any of y'all have any fears? Anybody afraid of anything? You know, I think we all have some. Yeah, good. I'm afraid. I'll just confess a few. I'm very afraid of snakes, and going to Tom Harbin's house always kind of makes me a little nervous. But there's people who are afraid of the dark, afraid of heights. We can be afraid of a lot of different things. Probably public speaking is a fear that many of y'all have. To be honest, it's obviously a good thing, not necessarily one of my fears. But I do have a fear of speaking publicly but not being prepared. And so I tend to prepare and maybe sometimes over-prepare for when I speak publicly. But I will confess to you today that I haven't been behaving like a preacher very well in the last 2 weeks. I'm still kind of in the youth minister mode, and so I'm not really in the preacher mode. And so typically preachers, they try not to do anything on Saturday night so they can kind of get lots of rest and be focused and all. And the last two Friday nights, Saturday nights, I don't even know what day it is. I'm tired. That's my point. Is, you know, we've gone out and done fun stuff on Saturday nights. Last night we were up in Murfreesboro, and we went out to dinner. My son is here, and his girlfriend, and they came in. So we went out to eat, and we went to see a movie last night. We got home at midnight. Guess what? The time changed. And so now we go to bed after 1. And so I'm kind of dragging. And so it's a very good thing that I'm prepared this morning. But I want you to know, because I'm so tired, that you're going to hear kind of the overflow this morning. You're probably not going to hear point by point from my notes, and that might be a bad thing. We might be here a long time today, because it's just going to kind of, what God's put on my heart is just going to come out today. But I do want to just share with you some important things. But you know, the other thing that I thought about as I was preparing this morning is this fear that a lot of us have of dying and of death. And you know, in our culture, we spend billions of dollars as Americans kind of prolonging or preventing death from occurring. And this whole aging thing, I mean, it's just something we're not very comfortable with. And I struggle with that as well. In fact, you know, you probably didn't know this about me, but I take those Botox injections all the time, and I'm really 85 years old, and you know, I hide it well because I'm trying to keep that aging. No, not really true, but you know, I do struggle with this aging thing because last week you probably didn't notice, but I tried to wear glasses while I preached, and my vision is just getting kind of weaker and weaker, and I really just need reading glasses. I don't need, you know, glasses for long distances. But I was trying to wear glasses so I could use my Bible and use my notes and all that. But as a speaker, it was just driving me crazy, because anybody behind the second row, y'all were just a blur. And you know, I heard that Dan Sain was sitting in the back kind of smiling and trying to be encouraging, and I didn't even know Dan Sain was in the back, you know? So if you guys were making ugly faces, you wasted it last week. If you were smiling and being encouraging, I'm sorry, I didn't feel that connection, and I just love to be able to see faces when I speak and kind of get that instant response to know if I'm, like, boring you to tears. And especially today, you know, when we're all a little bit light on sleep, having the lights bright, and me being able to see if you're awake or not is really a good thing this morning. So anyway, I struggle with that whole aging thing, as probably some of y'all do as well. But we're going to talk about a story this morning where Jesus deals with this whole question of death and dying, and is going to answer some of our questions probably about that subject. So let me lead us in prayer as we begin. Father, we just come to you, and we do want your word to just be poured into our hearts this morning. And I just pray that you would use me as your messenger this morning. I just pray that all of our lives will be open to your will, and that we will truly seek your message, and we will seek to apply it to our lives. Lord, just use me and use this text to teach us today. It's through Jesus that we pray. Amen. We begin our story. If you have your Bibles, want to open them to John chapter 11, that's where we're going to be today. But our story really begins at the end of chapter 10. And Jesus has kind of left Jerusalem with his disciples. They were about to stone him there, and he kind of escapes and gets away. And so he's actually at the gathering place where really his ministry first began. He's at the place in Perea where John the Baptist did his ministry, probably the place where Jesus was baptized. And I find it interesting that as Jesus is about to go into Jerusalem and be crucified and have his ministry come to a conclusion, that he is right at that very place where it all began. And a lot of people, it says, had come to believe in him as he was there, and they were still even talking about John the Baptist and his ministry. But while Jesus was there, with his disciples, a messenger came to him. And this messenger was sent from Mary and Martha because they said that the one that you love is sick. And that's obviously Lazarus. Jesus hears that Lazarus is sick, but it says that he didn't immediately go. What he said was, this sickness, it will not end in death. But that God is going to be glorified through it. And that it's actually going to, that God's Son will be glorified as well. And so, you know, Mary and Martha, the request wasn't Jesus come, heal Lazarus. I think there was an assumption that because Jesus loved Lazarus and Mary and Martha so much, that if they would just inform him that Lazarus was sick, he would go. But Jesus, he didn't go. It says that he stayed there 2 days longer. But it does emphasize twice in verse 2 and then again in verse 5 that Jesus loved Mary and Martha and Lazarus very much. Well, finally, Jesus decides to go on back to Bethany. It's about a 2 days journey. And when he does arrive back in Bethany, Martha comes out to meet him. And as you can imagine, the dear friend that Martha is to Jesus, as she leaves the house and comes out to meet Jesus as he's traveling in, her words were probably the words that all of us would share. It's Jesus. If you would have been here, Lazarus would have lived. It's sort of like her saying to Jesus, Jesus, where were you? Jesus, we're your friends, and we thought that you would come, that you would just drop everything and come and take care of Lazarus. We believe that you are the only one who could heal him, but you didn't come. I think there was some disappointment in Martha. And just a few verses later, Mary then comes out, and it's almost the same words from Mary. Jesus, if you would have been here, Lazarus wouldn't have died. And I think you can just feel that disappointment. And I wanted to just kind of pause here for a second and apply that to all of us this morning, because I believe that very often in life we go through times where we're disappointed with God, where we have expectations of how God is going to handle a situation or something that we want God to do, and it doesn't happen. It doesn't happen according to our time, or it doesn't happen at all as we hoped that it would happen. And we get frustrated, and we get disappointed. And I wanted you to hear this part of the story, because God can handle that. He can handle your disappointments. He can handle your frustrations. He's okay with your questions to him about where were you? How come this didn't go according to my plan? But I think as you look at this story, and I think as we think about life, we see that God's ways are always better than our ways. And God has a plan that we don't see, that we don't understand. And that's what we're about to see in this story as well. So Martha, you know, she's sort of expressing this disappointment or frustration, but you also see in that conversation that she still has a faith in Jesus. She still believes that Jesus, I know that you could have done something, that you still could have whatever you want. And Jesus says to her, Lazarus is going to rise again. And Martha goes, well, I know that he's going to rise again. And it's a belief system that they had here that, you know, that there was a resurrection that would come. You see, a lot of the Jews didn't believe in a resurrection, but many Jews did. And Mary and Martha obviously believed in that resurrection. But Martha wasn't really hearing what Jesus was saying. And it was more of a theological discussion, and Martha really didn't want to hear that right answer of, yeah, he's going to rise at the end. And so Jesus tried to go a little further, and he says, you know, well, I'm telling you that I am the resurrection and the life. And he who believes in me will live, even though he dies. You know, I think that's a powerful statement that Jesus makes, and we're going to come back to that in a second, because that is something I just want us to kind of zero in on this morning. But as Jesus tries to say to her, man, I am the resurrection, and I am the life, and Lazarus is going to rise again, even right now, she doesn't get it. Well, she goes on, and she goes and gets Mary and says, the teacher is here, and I think that's kind of an interesting concept that Mary and Martha call Jesus the teacher, because women weren't allowed to be taught by a rabbi. That was just a man thing, but obviously these two ladies had a very close relationship with Jesus, and they considered him their teacher. But as Mary comes out, and she kind of asks, or makes some of the similar statements. And as Mary comes to Jesus, with her come a lot of the other mourners and the people that were there. You know, I think one of the things that we maybe need to understand about this story is the customs around funerals for the Jews. The Jews, basically, they would bury someone on the very day that they would die. And so as Lazarus dies, immediately they would prepare his body for burial, and they put him in the tomb. And we know from looking at the story that when Jesus does arrive in Bethany, that he had already been dead and in the tomb for 4 days. Another part of their custom was that a lot of Jews believed that the soul of the person would kind of hover around the body for 3 days. But on the fourth day, and after the fourth day, there would be absolutely no hope of any kind of resuscitation, of any life coming back to that body. And that was kind of a superstition that they had, but it was just one that they very strongly held to. And as you think about this miracle, the reason why it's such an amazing miracle for Jesus, I mean, he had raised other dead people before, but they had always been just right at the very, you know, early stages of death. But never had anyone been raised from the dead after 4 days, after their soul had left. And so this miracle is so huge, because in the Jewish mind, I mean, there is no hope for Lazarus. He'd been dead 4 days already. So the mourners are there, and that's another custom that, you know, people would just, it was a huge event. And they would mourn and grieve a loss for a whole week. And people from Jerusalem had come. Bethany is just really just 2 miles from Jerusalem. So a lot of those folks came to be with Mary and Martha. And as Jesus is looking at Mary and the mourners and just how heartbroken that they are over the loss, it says that Jesus in his own heart became troubled. And that it says even that his spirit was deeply moved. And we know, and this is the famous verse that the first one we all memorized, right? That Jesus wept. But I wonder this morning, why did Jesus weep? Why was he so deeply moved and troubled? And, you know, it'd probably be easy to just say that he was caught up in the moment. Caught up in the emotion, and you've probably been there before, where you've been around people who are just sobbing and grieving, and whether you know the person or not, you can just be filled with that same emotion, and you can have that empathy and that sympathy and be brought to tears. I know I've had that happen to me many times. I don't know about you, but when that what's that TV show called where they fix everybody's houses? Home Makeover. Yeah, Extreme Home Makeover. Man, when that first came out, I can remember Sunday after Sunday, we would sit and watch the TV and just be bawling, you know, because they had gone in and they'd taken this house and just totally redid it for these people. And what a, boy, the excitement when the houses were revealed. And we don't know these people. We'll never meet these people. And yet, here I am, you know, this 40-year-old man crying, you know, over something like that, you know. So sometimes we can get caught up in the emotion of an event or what's happening to other people, and we can kind of, we can shed tears as well. But I don't think that's what was going on with Jesus. Yeah, I think he was probably touched by all of this, and this was his dear friend Martha and Mary who were mourning the loss. But you know, we know that Jesus knew the condition of Lazarus, and Jesus knew that he was about to raise Lazarus from the dead. So, Jesus, why are you crying? The Greek word, and I think it's interesting for the phrase that we translate, deeply moved. I think our English translations haven't done very good with that translation. Because what it actually means is that he was very angry. That when it says Jesus was deeply moved, that Jesus was very angry. And the reason why Jesus was very angry is because Jesus was just touched with his enemy. He was face to face with his enemy, which is death, which is Satan. And Jesus is looking at this situation from a totally different perspective than you and I would look at this situation. Jesus looked at this situation and saw how from the beginning of time, we weren't intended to die. We were intended to live forever. Death is this horrible consequence that's come into our life because of the sin that's in the world. It began with the sin of Adam and Eve, and that death has been passed throughout history to every human that's ever been alive. And as Jesus looks at his friend Lazarus in the tomb and looks at his friends and sees just the horrible sadness that's gripped him over this ridiculous thing called death, to Jesus it just makes him mad. And you notice his response the first time it says that he was deeply moved. He says, "Where have you laid him?" It's almost like Jesus is just so mad that he's getting ready to go get the big bully. He's going to go show that death, that enemy, who's boss. And so his first response to this being deeply moved is, "Where have you laid him?" Like, I'm going and I'm going to take care of this thing once and for all. You know, that's what happened just a little bit later, wasn't it? But the whole story with Lazarus is kind of a preview for what was coming. So I think the first movement of Jesus is this anger with death and this anger with the enemy. But as Jesus goes to the tomb, it says that then he is deeply moved again. And I think the second deeply moved comes as he's sort of envisioning what's about to happen with Lazarus. Again, put yourself in Jesus' shoes for a second. You know, Lazarus has been dead for 4 days. What does that mean about Lazarus? Man, he has gone to be with God. He is comforted with Abraham. I mean, he is in the best of all places. It's what we all hope for someday. It's what we hope, and we take comfort with our loved ones because of where they are after they go through this transition that death is. And so Jesus is probably a little bit frustrated that the fact that he's got to call him back. Because of all the sadness and because of all the things that are going on, Jesus is going to raise Lazarus from the dead, but he would probably just as soon let Lazarus stay in peace. Why bring him back to this miserable world, this place where he's going to have more days of sadness and more days of frustration and more days of people that really wanted to kill him again because he was a follower of Jesus? And so I think part of Jesus' frustration with the whole resurrection of Lazarus is, I hate to do this to this guy, but I love Mary and Martha, and so he's going to do it. So he has the stone rolled away, or he says, "Let's roll the stone away," and boy, what a great picture of what's going to happen just a little bit down the road. And you see the next part of the story, how Martha, she really doesn't have that faith. You remember I told you she didn't really get what Jesus was about to do? Because as Jesus is saying, let's move the stone away, she goes, wait a second. By now, he stinketh. That's the King James for y'all that like a little bit of King James every once in a while. He stinketh. There's a bad odor because his body's already decaying. You know, we can't roll that stone away. But unless the stone is moved, we won't see the power of God. And so they agree and move the stone, and Jesus calls Lazarus, come forth. And we know that he walks out of the tomb, and they unwrap him. And you can just imagine the incredible joy and celebration and the impact that that miracle had on that community, but the whole bigger picture. But as I think about that story, one of the things that I want to try to do as I preach to you is find ways that we can apply these stories to our lives. As I told you last week, as we talked about Zacchaeus, and we're looking at the different events as we're moving towards the cross, that I believe these stories are very significant, that there are reasons why these stories happened, and there's reasons why they were recorded in our scriptures. And so I want to find ways that they hit our lives. And I believe that there are two questions that this story is answering. The first question is the obvious question that all of us have, and it's really from the very beginning of time. And that is there life after death? You know, don't we all have that question? We want to know. When we die, you know, is it just like Rover? And if y'all are pet lovers, I don't want to offend anybody. But, you know, is it just over when it's over? Or is there something more? You know? And I believe this story answers that question. When Jesus says, I am the resurrection, he is saying, this is not the end. When we die, it is not over. There is a resurrection. And just as Lazarus came out of the tomb, and we're going to see in just a couple of weeks the Easter story, and we're going to come back to this point and this, just as this story is kind of a preview to Easter, this sermon is kind of a preview to the Easter sermon, because we're going to talk about resurrection again. Because as Jesus came out of the grave, the whole point of that is that we can conquer death as well. That as we die, it's just a passageway. It's just, as Jesus calls it earlier in this story, it's just going to sleep. And Jesus says, I'm going to go and I'm going to wake him up. Because really, that's what death is. It's just a transition from the physical life that we see to the eternal kingdom that we'll get to celebrate forever. And so what an awesome answer to the question, is there life after death? Man, absolutely there's life after death for those of us that believe in Jesus. Because Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. But I think the second question is probably, because most of us are, man, we're easy with that one. We've asked that question, we've answered that question, and probably most of Americans probably would go, yeah, I believe there's life after death, but probably not everybody. But the second question this morning might be one that could really help us. And that is there life before death? You know, I've talked to people as they're getting older and as they're kind of looking back at life, and this is usually probably the bigger regret and the bigger question is, man, I just feel like I didn't really live. Life just passed me so fast, and I didn't really do everything that I really wanted to do. Or I have regrets because the things that were most important weren't always the things that I focused on. And so I think the question for us this morning is there life before death? What kind of life are we living right now? And I believe that verse that we were just looking at, if you can find it up there, throw it up there again. When Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life, He's talking about the kind of life that he wants us to have. John 10:10 says that I came that you might have life and have it abundantly. He's not talking about heaven someday 10,000 years from now, 10 million years from now. He's talking about today. He's talking about tomorrow. He's talking about that we might have life and have it to the full. Have just the most amazing life that begins right here, right now. Life doesn't have to wait till after death. It begins right now. It says, I am the resurrection and the life, and he who believes in me will live, even though he dies. And whoever lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? You know, I'm going to play the ignorance new guy card for a second, because to be honest with you, I don't know yet everybody's occupation in here. So I'm going to pick on an occupation and hope that maybe it's not you this morning. But I have a little illustration about just how meaningless life can be at times. But there was this farmer, and this is not picking on the farmers. There was a farmer, and he was sitting on his front porch. And he saw these two guys pull up in a truck in front of his house. And they stop, and one guy gets out, and he walks around to the side of the highway, and he digs a hole. And then he goes back, and he sits down inside the truck. And a couple minutes later, another guy gets out of the truck, and he walks over, and he looks at the hole, and he kind of pushes the dirt back in and kind of taps it down, and he goes and gets back in the truck, and they take off, and they pull about 50 feet up the highway. And they do it again. And the guy gets out and digs a hole, and the other guy comes in and fills up the hole. And the farmer's just going, what in the world is going on? And, you know, he watches three or four times. And finally, he's so curious, he kind of walks out of the house or off the porch and goes and says, guys, what's going on? You know, what are you all doing? And they said, well, we work for the highway department. And the guy that plants trees is homesick today. Okay, some of y'all, you can talk about that at lunch if you want. Maybe you'll figure that out. But man, what a meaningless, purposeless life, right? To have the job that we dig the holes and we fill the holes, but the tree guy is not here today, you know? How many times do we go through life feeling like what we're doing is just purposeless, meaningless, has no value at all? You know, Jesus came to give our lives value and purpose. And this morning, I want you to feel that you can have that value and that purpose and meaning in your life. And no matter what job you have, if you do it for the glory of God, if you work at it with all your heart, and if you're trying to honor Him, that's a purposeful, meaningful life and a job. If you are a stay-at-home mom, man, what higher calling could there be than to raise those kids and to love on those kids that God has blessed you with? That is your ministry. And you should feel very fulfilled that you're doing exactly what God has called you to do when you're taking care of your kids. You know, I think about the people that Jesus came to, and when he rose from the grave and he went and he found all these disciples and followers that were kind of hiding out in this room. They were afraid that their lives were going to be taken next, and they were confused about what do I do next, and where do we go from here? And Jesus gave these people meaning and purpose. And these people that were hiding out all of a sudden became people who went and lived these incredibly adventurous lives, took great risks, and were living on the edge, and they were changing the world, and they were sharing the good news of Jesus' resurrection with people everywhere, and they were starting churches, and thousands of people were coming to know God because they had a purpose and a meaning in their life now. It went from being a more boring, mundane, routine life for these people to being a life that was just incredible because of their connection with God. And my question for you is, do you believe that this can happen for you? Do you believe that God is calling us to have this amazing life? I hope that you do, because that's what he wants to give you. Jesus is the resurrection, the hope for our eternity, the hope forever, but he's also the life. And he wants to fill our lives with himself, and so that we live for him. You know, I just got to kind of share this. I was so encouraged last week by some of your comments at the end of the sermon about the tree. And the tree was just, you know, this kind of afterthought that I threw out there that some of you, it was, you know, maybe your favorite part of the sermon about we want to lift up people to see Jesus. I appreciate your positive comments. And I thought about that for this lesson as well. You know, Thomas gets a bad rap. You know, he's the guy that doubts Jesus, and he has to see the hands and the feet and the nails and all that stuff. And we always, oh, poor doubting Thomas. But I loved his quote in this story. As they were, you know, going back to Bethany to be near Lazarus and Jesus was going to raise him, you know, the reason they left that area was because Jesus was going to be killed, and they all knew, man, we can't go back there because they're going to kill you again. But do you see Thomas's comment? He says, let us also go that we may die with him. Man, what an awesome statement that Thomas makes. And I don't think it was just, we may take it because of his reputation as a very pessimistic statement. But think about our message for today. Go back one more time to that Matthew 11:25, because it says, that he who believes in me will live even though he dies. You see, just like Thomas had figured out, man, we're going to go back and we're going to die. Jesus has called us to die. He has called us to just lay down our lives for him. And when we lay down our lives for him and are willing to die, that's when life starts. That's when life begins to get exciting, and that's when it happens. And so Thomas, he hit it right on the head. That we're going to go and we're going to die with Jesus. And I hope that all of us this morning understand that Jesus is calling us to die with him so that we can live. If you need to respond in any way to Jesus today, please do that while we stand and sing.